Chris Bryant out in the deep left center. Gone! A home run. His first of the year. Somehow he got it out of here into the stiff wind.
They're hard to come by right now. So it's frustrating for the whole group because we know the kind of potential that we have for our offense. And when we get that kind of pitching, we make defensive plays, it just comes back an offense that we know has the potential to put up big numbers. It's just the consecutive hits. We're just having trouble getting multiple under the inning. And once again, sometimes it looks like not much, but that's everything contrary to the approach that I know that they're taking as we walk up there. So we got to get a change. We got to get it fixed.
Mike Matheny, manager of the Kansas City Royals. Royals lose last night to the Cubs 2-0, wasting a very good performance by Danny Duffy. Welcome to Sports Ticket. Wade and Dusty with you. Chris Bryant, you heard before that, the home run in the eighth inning to give the Cubs a little bit of breathing room. Cubs win 2-0. Cubs now 8-2 on the season. Royals are 3-8. They've lost 4 in a row. And a former Royal draft pick dominating the boys in blue, Alec Mills, limited the Royals to 3 hits over 7 innings and did not relinquish a hit to the final 18 batters he faced. He was a 22nd round pick of the 2012 MLB draft by the Royals. He made his debut with the Royals in 2016, traded to the Cubs the following offseason for outfielder Donnie DeWeese. Yeah, you remember him. Traded back to Chicago in March of 2019. The fact that Mills blanked the team that dealt him away made his win last night a little bit sweeter. And the Royals offensively, we thought the pitching was going to be the biggest issue. Last night, that was not the issue. The biggest issue for the team, really, for the most part, has been a lack of offense. The Royals now have struck out over 100 times in just 11 games, and they, at one point, hadn't even drawn 20 walks once they reached 100 strikeouts. That is not good. That makes you long for the days when the Royals would put the ball in play in 2015, which, of course, helped them win a World Series. And Curtis Siebold, 810 WHB in Kansas City, says that the Royals are the first team in Major League Baseball history to have more than 80 strikeouts and fewer than 20 walks at the 10-game mark. Note I said 80 strikeouts. The Royals have 94. Well, now that's over 100 now. And any team that's had that type of number offensively early in the year, how did that team fare? The last team that had this horrible discrepancy between walks and strikeouts through a 10-game mark to start a season was the 2013 Houston Astros, which, by the way, theirs was better than what the Royals is currently. And the Astros that year finished 51-111. Here's the good news. The Royals will not finish 51-111 because there's only 60 games. So Dusty's 18-42 prediction before the season actually might be pretty optimistic after
it's
all.
It's looking that way.
Yeah, Royals 3-8, and we've played now basically a fifth of the season, right?
Pretty close. They're going to finish 10-50, hopefully.
10-50? Wow, that'd be something.
I mean, the way they're going right now, they can't get offense going.
Oh, yeah. I mean, at some point they will.
But yeah, I mean, they've already played. There's only 49 games. This is a quick season.
And they said that the sprint would be helpful for bad teams. Well, bad teams can bury themselves even quicker, too. Royals offense continuing their struggles. As you heard Mike Matheny, we got to get it fixed. They've been shut out for 13 straight innings. The Royals managed just 5 hits, 1-for-7 with runners in scoring position. Well, it's hard to get runners when you strike out. The Royals came in the game hitting just .231 with runners in scoring position. Danny Duffy last night, that was the bright spot. He's got no run support so far this year. Deserved much better. Gave up 3 hits and 1 run. Walked 4, struck out 6. Josh Stelmont blew away 3 batters last night. Struck out the side in 8th. That was a bright spot as well. Brady Singer makes his 3rd career start, and tonight's his 24th birthday. He'll try to snap the Royals' 4-game skid. He's part of the future, of course. And that's the Royals tonight at Wrigley to take on the Cubs at 7:15. So let's go Royals. All right. season's already over, and it didn't just start. But, you know, it might not even matter how well the Royals do, because I don't know if there will be a baseball playoffs. I don't know if they'll finish the season. The Cardinals, the latest team to suffer a coronavirus outbreak, the St. Louis Cardinals, their 4-game series with the Tigers being postponed. That was announced yesterday afternoon. Cardinals have had 13 members of the organization test positive for COVID-19 in the past week, including 7 players and 6 staff members, the league said in a statement. The club, which has been in quarantine since Thursday, will stay in Milwaukee, and their personnel will continue to be tested daily. The tentative plan is for the team to resume its regular schedule on Friday against the Cubs in St. Louis. The Cardinals' president of baseball operations said that the 5 members of the organization tested positive were asymptomatic, while 8 others had symptoms such as headaches, sniffles, and low-grade fever. and the people who tested positive are all back in St. Louis. He was asked Monday about reports that some of the members of the Cardinal baseball team went to a casino, and the president said, and I quote, "I have no factual reason to believe that is true. I have not seen any proof. If someone was at a casino, that would be very disappointing." Yeah, obviously. Cardinals now have 7 games to make up. Good luck with that. The Cardinals have 7, and that's assuming there aren't any more outbreaks with other teams. The Marlins, of course, have been off basically a full week. And listen, that's a pipe dream, in my opinion, to get these games made up. You just don't have the dates. You get the shortened season. You want to ending on time. To me, it's going to be pretty simple as long as, I don't know how they, I would think there was something already agreed upon, but maybe not. But you go to winning percentage, and it's just the way it's going to have to be. Is it fair? No, but it's not fair that, you know, the Royals are in a weaker division and they only get to play that division in NL Central, while the AL West and NL West could be really good and teams like the Angels got to play all the good teams. Mm-hmm. So it's already not fair. So if anybody's going to get their panties in a bunch about, oh, yeah, what are we going to do? You know, this team had 5 less games and they got a better winning percentage. That's not fair. Well, you know, too bad. This is a unique year. You'll do whatever you got to do. So the Cardinals, 7 games to make up, and we've only played 10 or 11 so far. Not very likely they're getting them all made up, although they're going to try. Of course, 7-inning doubleheaders. Talking doubleheaders. Yeah. By the way, you got something on in your beard or something there. Your beard. There you go. Not that anybody can see it at home. Yeah. I don't know if you ate a donut. It looked like frosting or something. Am I right?
What's that?
It looked like frosting.
I don't know what it was, to be honest with you.
All right. Well, that's scary. The Big 12 finally figured out something. Well, gee, just in the nick of time. The Big 12 announcing yesterday that the Big 12 Board of Directors announced conference football programs will play a 9-plus-1 schedule for the 2020 season, consisting of 9 conference games and 1 non-con home opponent. The start of conference play will be solidified in the coming weeks. So that's right. We don't know when the conference play is going to start quite yet. Amazing. With an anticipated start time sometime between mid to late September for conference play, with the expectation that non-conference games, which is just 1 for every school in the Big 12, are contested prior to beginning the league games. Well, duh. The model also gives the conference flexibility to move back the Dr. Pepper Big 12 Championship game to December 12th or December 19th. KU and Oklahoma were scheduled to begin on August 29th. Oklahoma, they're already going to move that back to like the 12th or the 19th of September. I mean, you don't want to play 1 game and have 3 weeks off between games for your conference opener.
No.
KU more than likely is going to, well, I don't know how they're going to do it, because Southern Illinois, they got to match up their schedule with them. It looks like Boston College is out because they have to go to Boston College, even though the game's supposed to be in Lawrence. They're not going to do that. Give up a home game. That was the new ACC rule. So they'll drop the Boston College game and 1 other. And it looks like Kansas will end up with Southern Illinois. But if they play August 29th, then they might have 3 weeks off between games. So I would think they'll move that to a different date, but it might depend on what Southern Illinois is doing too. So I don't have a lot of clarification there. So the bottom line is there's still a lot of questions because, one, we don't know still the starting date of the season. We thought August 29th. Now we don't even know that. So any thoughts on the Big 12 and, you know, being so proactive, being the 5th out of 5 conferences that really figure something out? Although, in fairness, the Big 10's still working out some things, but they were the first one of the 5 to say, hey, we're not doing non-con.
Yeah, I still probably, you would hope and want to believe that it's because they only had 9 teams and they're trying to figure out how to get a 10th game or maybe get another game after that. I don't know. Or 10 teams with 9 games on their schedule is what I mean on the conference schedule. But I don't know. I think it's probably the right thing that they're doing here as they finally made their decision. But then logistics will be interesting to try to figure out who's going where, because a lot of these other smaller conferences, you can say push these games back, play them at a different time. But, you know, what are the other conferences doing, the MAC or the, you know, all those other FCS conferences? Can they just go ahead and say, oh, yeah, we'll come later and play it when they already have the other games scheduled within their conference that late in the season? So the non-con thing could get a little bit tricky, I think, if you want to try to do it at the right time.
It expected the Big 12 is going to start the conference season either September 19th or 26th, but we don't know that for sure yet. Very doubtful. As I said, Oklahoma is going to start August 29th against Missouri State. At least one Big 12 school will announce an entirely new non-con opponent, not one of 3 currently on its schedule for its 10th game. At least one other Big 12 school is waiting for the starting date of the Big 12 conference schedule before deciding on its non-con opponent. Yeah, I wouldn't wait on the Big 12 forever. You may never get a game. I don't know if that's a good idea. You're going to wait on the Big 12 that's known for waiting. Okie dokie. You must have a lot of patience. Let's see here. Big 12 has no non-con game scheduled against Power 5 opponents, of course, because the other Power 5 have said, hey, we're just doing conference games. So the Big 12 is left holding the bag there. Some Big 12 ADs wish the league presidents had approved an 11 or 12 game schedule because of the difficult round-robin conference schedule. The Big 12 is the only Power 5 conference that plays a round-robin format. The ADs favored being able to schedule more winnable non-conference games. The Big 12 is debating between two formats, the adopted plus one model and a full 12-game schedule. At the heart of the matter was whether the 10-team league could balance a need for TV inventory with the safety and feasibility of either a conference-only schedule or one that allowed for only one non-con game. The Big 12 championship game is scheduled to be at AT&T Stadium in Arlington on December the 5th, but that could be moved back, as we said earlier. And, yeah, so there you have it. The ACC is going to start their games the week of September 7th. The Pac-12, the SEC starting their game September 26th. The Big Ten still trying to figure it out, as is the Big 12. There you go.
There it is.
That's your update on college football. Very fluid situation that could always change, as we know. Speaking of college football, this is going to happen more and more, I think. A very, very talented wide receiver for the University of Minnesota, the Gophers, more than likely is going to be a top first or second round draft pick. He's got some comparisons to some current pro wide receivers. Rashad Bateman is opting out of the college football season, so he will not play college football. He'll get ready for the NFL draft. He's the second college star. Remember, Caleb Farley, corner for Virginia Tech, made that decision last week. And so there's two college stars that we talked about it. If they move football from fall to spring, none of the stars are going to play. And that's why that's not really an option, because NFL draft being in late April, early May. And now you've got, even starting here in about a month, month and a half, and you've got some stars that are opting out of college football. And I understand why. I do. I really, really do.
Yeah.
More on the college football coming up here in a moment. The NFL has moved up their opt-out date in regards to players deciding whether or not they're in or they're out for the upcoming NFL season. Of course, we know that the Patriots have 8 players that have opted out. Chiefs have 2, Tardif and Williams, and there could be more, certainly. And the opt-out has been moved up to Thursday. So Thursday is the deadline, a couple more days for players to figure something out. And I think the players, here's the deal. The players now have to understand and take all this information under consideration. The NFL has the following. This has been released today. Players are subject to escalating fines for the following violations of the NFL-NFLPA protocols: refusal to submit to required virus testing under the screening and testing protocol after the player has received a written warning for a first offense, could be fined $50,000. This fine may be escalate to a maximum fine of an amount equal to 1 week's salary and or suspension without pay for a period not to exceed 4 weeks. Point 2, refusal to wear a mask or required personal protection equipment known as PPE in accordance with COVID-19 protocols after the player has received a written warning for a first offense. The maximum fine for that is $14,650. Refusal to wear Kinaxon proximity recording tracking device. Yeah, the tracking device. Required by the treatment protocol after the player has received a written warning for a first offense, $14,650. Refusal to maintain physical distancing in the club facility or during a team travel after the player has received a written warning for a first offense, fine of $14,650. Repeated violations of the above rules for the NFL players will subject a player to a maximum fine of an amount equal to 1 week's salary and or suspension without pay for a period not to exceed 4 weeks for conduct detrimental to the club. So let me try to clean this up for you, because I know there's a lot of jargon in there. Basically, what this is saying is you're going to get a written warning for your first offense. That's going to be, hey, 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 you're not supposed to do that. And then after that, it's going to be a fine of $14,650 or less. That's the maximum fine for 3 of those situations. But if you refuse to submit to required virus testing, that one, they can fine you $50,000 after a written warning. And you could also be suspended and lose a week's salary and suspended up to 4 weeks. And if you continuously repeat and violate any of those 4 points of emphasis I just went over, then you are looking at, once again, suspension of possibly up to 4 weeks, and you lose 1 week's salary. So I would say that players are still trying to gather information as to, hey, we're going to do this. What about a face shield? Are we going to wear a face shield? Are we going to wear a mask while we're playing, which doesn't seem safe? There are lots of questions, I think, for the players, and they have 48 hours now to figure it out. Now, I could argue they don't have enough time to figure it out. I could also argue that they should probably be aware of most of this stuff already for the most part. And this does say NFLPA protocols. So I'm sure that the Player Association, obviously their union and their leader, told them about all this. I would hope the players are aware of it. But I think that'll be another contributing factor, or whether or not more players are going to opt out, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. I think once you see all those some people are probably going to call them restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably what it's like in their mind. Like, once you see all those regulations, I guess for most people would be like, I don't know if I want to go through all that. I don't mm-hmm. know if I want to take the chance here, and maybe I accidentally missed the test or something like that because I had something else. I don't know. You know, things going through your mind when you hear all that stuff.
Right.
Yeah, I would think that there are some people that are going to be like, players will be, I don't want to do all that. So I'm just going to sit this one out.
You're going to have more opt-outs the next couple of days. And you're going to see, I think, more, if not many more, college students as well. The Big Ten just came out, is expected to unveil its 2020 football schedule. Let's see, that's 16 hours ago. That just popped up new on my Twitter page. Interesting. So that would mean today, if that was 16 hours ago he tweeted it, that would mean today is the Big Ten is going to announce their 2020 schedule. They're expecting it to be a 10-game schedule, so 10 league games. Just like basically everybody else is doing, except the Big 12, because the Big 12 can't play 10 league games. Yeah. Well, they could. Just you'd have to play somebody twice. Oh, my. Let's see. What else do we have here? Let's go to basketball for a moment. Fred VanVleet. Still amazing he wasn't drafted. You know, I when I saw him as a freshman at Wichita State, I just thought he was the real deal. I don't know why. There's something that stood out to me. I don't know if it was cockiness, confidence, whatever. He just had a demeanor. He had an aura about him when I saw him, and of course he helped Wichita State make it to the Final Four, and VanVleet, he's one of my favorite players. He was at Wichita State, and he just does everything he needs to do. He's a winner. That's the best way I can describe Fred VanVleet. He's a winner no matter where he goes. He's an absolute winner. He's a bulldog. And so my son, I told him yesterday, my oldest, who's a fan of basketball, I said, hey, you see VanVleet had 36 points, 7 three-pointers, and was 13-13 of the foul line, and the Raptors 107-103 went over the Heat yesterday in the NBA bubble. My son goes, man, I never thought he'd be that good. I said, see, I thought he could.
Yeah.
I said, see, I thought he could. Now, maybe not to the point where he's going to score 36 in an NBA game. Maybe not. But I, when he didn't get drafted, I'm like, oh, dude, whoever picks up Fred VanVleet's going to get a steal. And the Raptors did. And let's be honest, without Fred VanVleet, the Raptors probably don't win an NBA title.
Yeah.
And everybody's talking about the Lakers because that's sexy, LeBron and AD, and that's what ESPN wants to gravitate towards. And the Clippers, who is still my team to pick to win it. George and Kawhi Leonard, they got stars. And there's the Nuggets that get overlooked. I think the Nuggets are really good, and they got the rookie Bol Bol that might be an X factor. And then in the Eastern Conference, everybody's talking about the Bucks because they got this great record, and they got Giannis, and everybody just keeps sleeping because, you know, Toronto was a one-man team, obviously. I mean, Kawhi did everything for them last year. Kawhi sat out 22 games last year, and do you know what the Raptors' record was when Kawhi Leonard sat on the bench and rested? 17-5.
I was actually going to say 17-5 as a guess.
17-5. 17-5. That means you're a pretty good team without Kawhi. And now Kawhi leaves and goes to the Clippers. You're still a pretty good team without Kawhi.
Yes.
The Raptors, I would not sleep on them, and they beat the Lakers the other night. Yesterday they beat the Heat. The Nuggets beat the Thunder yesterday 121-113. The Pacers over the Wizards 111-100. The Pelicans over the Grizzlies by 10. The Sixers edged Dusty Spurs 132-130 in a high-scoring affair, and the Lakers knocked off the Jazz 116-108. Six games today on the docket. Suns, Clippers, Mavericks versus Kings, Nets versus Bucks, Magic versus Pacers, Celtics, Heat should be a good one, and the Rockets and Trailblazers. And the Rockets the other day beat the Bucks, and of course the Rockets are going with that very small lineup. Basically, it's a 6-6 league for the Rockets, except they're the only team playing that type of ball. But who knows? It might end up working out for them, especially in this weird season that we have, thanks to COVID-19. So once again, VanVleet, 36 points, made 7 threes, and was a perfect 13-13 from the line. Oh, by the way, he's a pretty good defender, too.
Yeah, he's all right.
He's not bad. And Siakam is on the team. He's an all-star. And Kyle Lowry's still good. And they've got Marc Gasol. I mean, they've still got talent without Kawhi Leonard. But Kawhi helped get him over the top, no doubt.
Oh, yeah.
College basketball. Kansas has added Stephen F. Austin to their schedule. Is that a good thing? Stephen F. Austin went in the Cameron Indoor last year and beat Duke. Kansas lost Harvard because the Ivy League decided in early July it would not participate in athletics until the spring of 2021. Thus, KU lost Harvard as an opponent at Allen Fieldhouse on December 29th. KU announcing yesterday that Stephen F. Austin has been added to replace Harvard on that date in December. And Stephen F. Austin, coached by one-time KU staffer Kyle Keller, Bill Self said in a statement, "When we lost the Harvard game, we wanted to fill the opening with a quality opponent, and Kyle's team clearly fits that description. Kyle's done a fabulous job, highlighted by the 2018 NCAA tournament berth and the win at Duke last year. He's a great coach, a great friend. I look forward to having him back at Allen Fieldhouse. This will be a game that will benefit us and hopefully help us get better." Last year, before the pandemic shortened the season, of course, Stephen F. Austin, the Southland Conference champion, finished 28-3. And as we said, they won at Duke, ending Duke's long non-conference game winning streak there at home at Cameron Indoor. So that's a quality opponent, no doubt. Coming to Kansas in Lawrence on December 29th or so, we think. Still don't know how. I still don't know if we're going to have basketball, but we shall see.
Yeah.
Okay. We mentioned the NFL, the opt-out rules, this and that. Is the NFL vulnerable? Is the NFL vulnerable? And what do I mean by that? Well, is the NFL vulnerable from a standpoint, is there anybody at some point in time that could compete against the National Football League? I personally don't think so. Not for quite some time. But XFL has tried, right? They've tried to compete or provide an alternative. Well, the XFL is going to live on thanks to a guy that you may have heard of, Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Yeah, Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Redbird Capital and Danny Garcia teamed up to purchase XFL for approximately $15 million just hours before the once-bankrupt league was set for auction. And so there you have it. The Rock is an owner of the XFL. So what could we come up with? So are we going to see, like, body slamming in XFL? And, well, because, of course, the Rock was a WWE wrestler. And, of course, he's a movie star now. And I like the Clash of the Titans or the Titan Games. That's fun. My family watches that sometimes. And I think Dwayne The Rock Johnson's a cool dude. I do. I sure as heck wouldn't want to upset him because his arm's bigger than my whole body. But Dwayne The Rock Johnson seems like a cool dude. Seems likable. I like him and Kevin Hart in some of those movies together. I just think that's an interesting combination. I don't think Kevin Hart's always funny, but some people do. I think he's funny at times. But with The Rock, I think he's pretty funny. So there you go. The Rock. Can you smell what The Rock's cooking?
And he was a football player before
all
that.
That's right. He was at Miami. He was at the Hurricanes. He was, a defensive lineman / linebacker. Yeah. Yep. And didn't make it, of course, to the pros. But, yeah, he was a football player. He knows football. And he's a very smart dude. And,
Dwayne, no doubt.
And he's got money, obviously. At least $15 million or so. So, anyway, Dwayne The Rock buys the XFL. So, do you smell what The Rock is cooking? Yeah, you bet. Let me jump to this one. Two things to end the show that we probably spent a little bit of time on, and I saved them for the end so we had a little bit of time. Let's start with the one that's more local, and then we'll start with, and then we'll go to the one that piggybacks what we talked about yesterday, and that is, schools are supposed to start here fairly soon. We got schools starting as early as August 19th, August 20th, August 24th, August 21st, August 27th, August 30th. Russell's starting September 2nd. So schools suppose they're going to start here somewhat soon, by the end of the month for most in our area, if not all. And so what athletic directors are doing, administrators are doing, principals, superintendents is trying to get everything sorted out. Here we go. Regards to the protocol, this and that. How are we going to keep kids safe? How are we going to keep our staff safe? What are we going to do when they enter the building? What do we do if somebody does have COVID-19? So forth and so on. And it's always a moving target. It's been, the goalposts have always been moving for administrators of schools and county health departments who work hand-in-hand with the schools in case there is an outbreak, or here's what we're going to do, or we recommend this or that. And so we've already seen this spring and summer that there have been well-intended plans that have been laid out or at least been put together behind the scenes, and some that were basically ready to go that were basically somebody stuck a stick of dynamite and blew it all up and everybody had to go back to square one. And that's happened a few times in regards to whether it be executive order from the governor or the state house, or if there's been changes in laws so that where you can opt out. Oh, we have to do this. Oh, no, we don't have to do this. And we can opt out. But each county can do this at the local level and so forth and so on. And then there have been situations where people have not known in high profile positions across the state what's going to happen in Topeka until we all hear about it.
Yeah.
Which I think is, you know, unfortunate.
Very.
So I'm not trying to make this political at all, because that's not the intent of bringing this up. But this is a fact. The governor of Kansas it was July 27th, so I believe that was last Monday. The governor of Kansas brought up the possibility of re-implementing phase two. Now, phase two, if you're not familiar, if you don't remember the phase two situation, what phase two, well, we had 1.5, remember?
Yeah.
That for a week, which was really weird. But anyway, the governor of Kansas said on July 27th that she is willing to return to phase two if COVID-19 case numbers don't improve. Well, the latest numbers coming out yesterday don't seem to be improving. Now, there's a lot of counties that have more cases than they've had before. But of course, the ones that, of course, had the biggest problem have been the bigger populated counties: Sedgwick County, Johnson County, Wyandotte County, so forth and so on. Shawnee County's got enough. Riley County's got their share too, by the way. So she said she's considering taking the state back to phase two of the Ad Astra plan based on the state's COVID-19 case numbers. Phase two would limit mass gatherings to 15 or fewer people and close bars and nightclubs. Now, it doesn't take very long to put this together, right? 15 or fewer. So before you start saying, oh, so they're going to close bars and nightclubs, we're going to let kids go to school, I would say, no, I don't think that's going to happen. What that would mean is that schools don't go to school. Schools don't go to school makes no sense. Kids don't go to school. There would be no school. Because unless all... Now, here's the interesting part, and this is where it gets very, very, very dicey, and this is where it's going to become political. If the governor, who, by the way, was supposed to have a conference yesterday and postponed it to tomorrow, any idea why that might be, Dusty?
Still trying to decide what she wants to do.
No, the primary election's today.
Oh, yeah, the election, yeah.
The primary's today.
Yeah.
That's why she's moving to Wednesday. Why they couldn't have decided that last week.
Yeah, no, if you had it, you knew the election was today.
It's been scheduled for a very long time.
Yeah. Like, and forever, when it is.
And maybe that's not the main reason, but I think she didn't want to do anything that might sway something in regards to voting.
It'd be more of a problem in the general election than the primary.
No, I agree with that.
But, yeah.
But I just think the governor and their people just said, you know what, let's just wait past, let's get past the primary.
Yeah.
Which I don't see a problem with that. I mean, waiting till Wednesday is fine, except if she's going to implement phase two, and now all of a sudden there's two less days for people to get prepared. But this is where the stick of dynamite can blow everything up. And that's just an analogy I'm using, of course. It's not MacGyver, okay? for young people, MacGyver was a TV, never mind. So, Governor Kelly could go to phase two. And if she goes to phase two, then that would mean no mass gatherings of more than 15 people. Now, here's where it gets really interesting. Because, and that's, we're talking, you know, being able to social distance, so forth and so on, and this and that. And then who decides exactly what's a mass gathering of 15 or fewer from the standpoint of this? Let's just go with a sports practice, for instance. If you have tennis, most tennis teams, even golf teams, don't necessarily have more than 15 anyway. And in golf and tennis, you can certainly social distance. You can play, you can spread them out. This person's playing hole one, here's hole two for golf. You got multiple tennis courts.
Yeah.
That you know, so that really, to me, you could say we're okay there. If you have volleyball and you play volleyball 6 versus 6 and you have two subs on one side, one on another, and you scrimmage, that's 15, you'd still be all right, right? Because conceivably, you could have a volleyball practice at a high school and a volleyball practice at an elementary or another gym, and JV goes here and varsity goes here or freshmen are here, and you have two groups of less than 15 people that are practicing volleyball.
Yeah.
So you're probably all right. You might be all right there, depending on the school. The bigger schools are going to have problems with this, clearly, if this would be implemented. And let me stress, it hasn't been implemented yet, and it might just be a bluff. Or it might really happen. And I'm going to tell you something. The schools really don't want this to happen.
No.
Because this just blows up everything they've worked so hard to do. All this time they spent hour after hour, minute after minute, day after day, is just going to actually be torched if phase two is put into place. Now, I mean, a lot of the protocols can still be the same, but now it's, when are we going to start school? People are going to be asking when, how, where, what? When are we going to get to start school? And the schools will probably have to say, we don't know, because the governor doesn't. How long is phase two going to last if she re-implements it? Okay, and can she only do it till September 15th? There's something with the September 15th date, and I haven't figured all that out yet, but it gets complicated after a while. I'll try to keep it as simple as possible. So, but here's the interesting thing. With the new law that was put into place, we've seen counties opt out. They can opt out of all kinds of things. They can opt out of the mask. They can opt out of the stay-at-home order. We've seen that, right?
Yes.
So the question to me is, could a county talk with the school and say, listen, you can do the phase two all you want. We opt out. We opt out. Why? We're a small school. We don't have more than 15 people in a classroom. So we can have school. We can have classes. We have, of course, what's a mass gathering? Is a mass gathering everybody inside the school building, or is it in each classroom?
Yeah.
You see where I'm going with that?
Yeah.
Band, orchestra, you might have more than 15. That would be a problem, possibly. Football, you have more than 15 usually. That could be a problem. Although, you could probably argue this. Well, really, when you play football, there's only about 10 or 12 guys within 6 feet of one another, and that's the offensive line versus the defensive line, and sometimes it's not even that many, right?
Yeah.
Wide receivers are spread out. Okay, you might have an I-back, a fullback, a quarterback. There's five linemen and a tight end. We got 6, 7, 8, 9, and then 5 defensive linemen. That's 14. I'm good. I mean, how many times do you see 15 players in a pile making a tackle? That rarely happens. Yeah. That'd be 15 to 22, or an 8-man, that'd be everyone but one.
Yeah. Safety, just stay back there for a while.
Hey, dude, you're our safety. You're also the safety against phase two being violated, all right? Now, here's the thing, and I don't know the answer to this question. What if a county, let's go back. If you're just tuning in, I want you to make sure you understand what I'm saying. If the governor of Kansas would implement phase two, which could strictly be a bluff and she's not going to do it, but let's say that the governor implements phase two again, and you can opt out, the county by county, you can opt out. So counties that don't have really issues with COVID-19 or don't have many cases may say, well, come on, we don't have to do this. They opt out, which they legally can do, just like the mask and everything else. Legally opt out. Then the schools have to make the decision, all right, the county opened the door for us to still go to school. Because we have small classes, we have small sports teams, we could still practice, we could still get together, we could still have classes, so forth and so on. But I know people are listening right now are going, yeah, Wade, but how's that going to work if you're publicly funded by the state? And that is my question.
Yeah.
Because does the governor have the power to come out Wednesday tomorrow and say, well, I know she has the power to say, oh, we're going to have an executive order, we're going back to phase two. I know she has the power to say that. But if, let's say, Lakeside or Osborne or Beloit or Smith Center or Concordia or Pike Valley or Lincoln or Sylvan, whoever it is, St. John, well, St. John's is private, so that's different.
Yeah.
But the public schools I'm talking about. If the schools would decide, one school in the whole state or 5 or 10, don't matter how many, just as long as there's one. If a school decides, listen, we still need to go to school. We've got everything. We work so hard to put all this together. We don't have any active cases in our county right now, or we barely have any, and we're going to move forward. Does the governor have the power to say, listen, you defied my phase two order, and you're publicly funded, and we provide the public funding from here in Topeka. You're not going to be reimbursed. For instance, let's say Lakeside, Beloit, Osborne, whoever it might be, whatever school district you want to put in there, fill in the blank, decides, you know what, we're going to go ahead and we want to have school. We're going to go ahead and go for a week or two. And then 2 weeks after they start, then everybody else goes back to school and phase two is lifted. Would the governor have the power to say, listen, you did your own thing. You ain't getting funded for those 2 weeks. And we know school districts don't exactly, they're not waiting in a pool of money.
No.
So I believe that the school districts won't do that. I believe school districts will not take a chance on possibly not getting funding for going to school, even though they wouldn't be even violating a phase two situation, possibly. But I don't know the answers. And if you are a school district that maybe is already looking ahead going, huh, is there a way we can opt out and still have school if there is a phase two implemented by our governor? You better be able to answer this question. And the question is, if we start and others can't start and everybody else honors phase two and us and a few schools decide to move forward, are we going to be funded for the full amount of time we had school, including the week or two we went when everybody else didn't because of phase two?
Yeah.
You better know the answer to that question.
Yeah.
If you don't, if you don't have the answer to that question, there's no way a school district, unless they're just lavished with a whole bunch of money, the school district would be very unwise, to try to proceed having school despite phase two being implemented by the governor, even though the county can opt out and your schools maybe would have the option of still going to school and you could opt out from that standpoint. But if you're publicly funded, you need that money. And you see the dilemma that would cause. So more than likely, the scenario I'm presenting to you, ladies and gentlemen, it's probably very unlikely a school district is going to move forward, even though the county that they reside in may opt out of phase two. It's probably still doubtful because of the public funding aspect. Now, what about the private schools? Private schools going to move forward and do what they need to do? Are they going to do whatever they want to do because they're private, not publicly funded by the state? That's another wild card to this.
Oh, yeah.
And there are quite a few private schools in the state of Kansas, more than you might imagine. So that's where the Kansas governor, our governor of Kansas, and I say our, you can say, well, I don't claim her because I'm not a Democrat. No, I'm sorry. I hate to break it to you. Just like if, you know, I don't claim our president of the country because he's Republican. It works both ways, people. You have him. That's your president, and you have her. That's your governor. Whether you like or dislike the president or the governor or whoever else in political office, yes, you didn't vote for that person, but that's who the majority voted for. That's what happened, okay? That's who you got. That's based on elections. Hopefully it was all fair and square. That's who we got. So that is our president. That is our governor. We don't have to like that person. We don't have to agree with that person. We may even despise that person. But that's, we live in this country, or we live in this state in this situation. That's who it is. That's our governor. You might not say it with pride. You may say it with pride. You may be fully happy with what the governor is doing. And I'm not trying to say one way or the other whether I'm happy or unhappy. I do have a few things that I've thought of recently that I'm like, I just really think you're putting people in a really tough spot by this timing of decisions and things like that. But I'm no expert on it, so who am I to say this is how you should be doing everything? Because everybody's an expert, just like we are experts on how a manager should manage, but we've never managed before.
Yeah.
Like I've managed, you know, the high profile Pee Wee Baseball Association. So, you know, I'm an expert. I got paid big money for that. And then I got fired from that job. Yeah, that's right. I was fired from Pee Wee. No, I'm kidding. I wasn't. So those are some of the things that I throw out there, that if the governor of Kansas implements phase two, even if counties opt out, more than likely all the schools funded publicly, the public schools that are funded, are not going to, it messes everything up. It squashes everything you just did. And now you got to sit and go, well, now we just sit back and wait till when phase two is going to be lifted, because you know there's not going to be a set date, because it's going to be based on where the cases are.
Yeah.
Which I don't blame anybody for not putting a set date on it. Or you can say, September 15th or September 1st or whatever date they want to say, that's when we're going to reevaluate it. Phase two is in effect for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. And then we'll see, kind of like they did before. And then we'll see if we phase down to phase three or we phase out or whatever we're going to do. And guess what that creates? It creates the exact same thing we were talking about with the Big 12 this week. Uncertainty.
Yes.
We don't know. I mean, can you imagine what administrators are going to have to go through and health officials if that does happen? If phase two is implemented by the governor, even if you can opt out, it still has a tremendous impact on the schools because they're publicly funded. So they're basically left holding the bag again.
Yeah.
In the world do they do? What does a school administrator do? I think, sadly, what you're going to have to do is just throw your pencil and pen in the air, throw it into the wall, the ceiling, pull the rest of your hair out of your head if you have any left, and you just go, well, we'll wait again. It's a really bad spot. And I really hope, listen, if phase two is necessary for us to get everything under control and keep people safe, and if that is the only way we can do it, then okay. I guess that's what we have to go with. Not we don't have to go with it if we can opt out. But if that's the way it is, I guess that's the way it is. I really hope phase two isn't implemented, because I believe it's going to absolutely, like I said, implode all of these plans, and it's going to throw a wrench. And I'm not just saying this. I know it's a sports talk show. It does. It totally messes up everything for sports.
Yeah.
And it messes up. And by the way, education is more important than sports. For some of you out there that don't understand that, academics, education should come first before sports. And I'm the biggest sports fan out there. But that should be first and foremost, getting our kids back to school. I've said it before. I'm okay with my kids going back to school and not starting sports for a month, because they need to go back to school. I truly believe, and you might be out there and you disagree with me, but I truly believe my kids need to go to school. They've got to go to school. One, for their sanity. Two, for their mental health. Three, they need face-to-face learning, I believe. Now, some kids, maybe the exception to the rule, that do better online learning. That's fine. To each their own. Everybody has their strengths. But I really think my kids need to go back to school. Am I putting them in harm's way? My wife and I, if I say, and I let them go back to school? Possibly. But if I let my kid get in the car and ride in the back seat with me when I go to work, I'm putting my kid at risk, right?
Yeah.
And I know it's not the exact same thing, no. but it's risk. You have risk every day. I mean, if I let my kid go ride a four-wheeler or ride his bike down the street, somebody could come around the corner, run a stop sign, and run somebody over. I mean, if my kid, who's 14, about ready to drive, he gets behind the wheel, he's taking a risk. I'm taking a risk. In regards to, and anybody out on the road is taking a risk driving when he's out there, because Lord knows 14-year-olds, what's going to happen if you have farmer's permit or whatever, learning permit, this and that. But we all take risk, is my point. And so I just think there are many rewards to my kids going back to school. So I want my kids to go back to school, whether it's August 20th, September 4th, September 12th. I eventually want them to go to school. And so a phase two implementation by the governor, if that happens, and some people believe it's a bluff, which it very well could be, but it still is out there. It's still a cloud that's hanging out there. And it was only put out there by her a week ago. And yeah. Yesterday, not having a press conference gives you no more answers or any inkling into what she might do. So now you wait another 48 hours and you wait till tomorrow to see what is she gonna do. And here's the thing, some people, and I've talked to various people in various situations, school administrators, I've talked to health officials during this whole thing this spring and summer. And they honestly, if you ask them, what do you think is going to happen? They don't know any more so than you do in some cases, which is kind of scary. Now, sometimes they have an inkling. They might have a feeling. But they usually don't know until the governor starts talking at the press conference. That's when they typically know where she's leaning or what she might do. And here's the thing. We thought that was going to be yesterday. Now we're waiting till tomorrow. An extra 48 hours. And by the way, I'm just talking about schools. And I'm talking about extracurricular activities. But this affects everyone. Phase two, I just talked to a business owner yesterday. He has a restaurant. And he had just reopened. And he says, I said, now what do you want to do? You know, you want to advertise? You want to promote? What do you want to do? He goes, right now I'm going to just have to sit tight because I got to see what the governor's going to do.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, there's the phase two. And he goes, if the phase two happens, he goes, that's going to hurt me even worse. So we're not talking to school. We're talking the economy. We're talking across the board.
Yeah.
And you can sit here, listen to this and go, well, you know, the governor is horrible if she implements phase two. Or you can say she's great that she's doing phase two because she's looking out for the safety of Kansans. And I'm not going to disagree with whatever perspective you have, because you probably have a good argument one way or the other. All I'm saying is, if phase two is implemented again, as you're so close and all these schools have finally figured out their start date, and Keisha said you can start practices August 17th, and the Kansas State Board of Education said, okay, we're going to let things go as they are, and then Keisha made their decision, and then the schools made all their decisions as to when they're going to start and getting supplies and this and that, and they have a target date and going through all the protocols and going through, here's when you got to report as a staff, in-service days and this and this and whatever else and da-da-da-da-da, and then all of a sudden phase two is implemented. This is what you do. You crumple up your paper.
Yeah.
Throw it in the trash basket, at least some of it. You throw your pencil in the air. You lean back in your chair. You grab the hair, if you have any, pull it out, tug on it, take a big sigh, and go, all right, let's start again.
2020, somebody might throw their laptop too.
Yes, 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 yes. It's like writing a song. You know, you spend a whole bunch of time on a song, and I'm not a songwriter, but I know somebody that is, and they've told me this. you have this good idea for a song, and you put it together. Sometimes you can just beat it out. You can belt it out, write it on paper, and it just flows. It's just there. And then there's times where you work on it, and you got a really good part, and you just can't, and you just keep, that's it. You just crumple up the paper, and you start over. You got to have a fresh slate. Unfortunately, that's not what administrators want to do right now.
No. There's been enough of that, of the throw out the planes of what we had here, because this
same thing,
this
county
happened.
Health officials, yeah. Restaurant owners, business owners, not just restaurant owners, anybody, any business.
Yeah, anybody that's affected by this, and then you get back into the discussion of what's essential and what's not, and mm-hmm. and all that stuff, too. So, yeah, I don't go too far with all that stuff, because I think you can get political, like you said earlier, right. and things can spiral in a wrong way, either way, you right. know, whatever you believe on that. But I just, personally, I agree with you. I think kids need to be in school right now. Mm-hmm. And like you said about your kids, I don't have kids, but I have nephews that are ranging all the way from going to be a junior in high school to a kindergartner.
Right.
And every single one of these kids, what do I do? I mean, they're going crazy.
Okay? Yeah, well, and so are adults.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the part you don't even come to yet, too, when we're talking about
is mental health.
Mental health for adults, and what are all these adults doing that, right. you know, you can't, if they've gone back to work now, a lot of them. Mm-hmm. And so now do you have to talk to your boss, say, come home? Do I lose my job because I have to stay at home?
Right.
Do I do this or that? There's so many other things that go into that too. If you don't get school back into session and have these kids, and I know that you have to make decisions and you have to do what's right for your family and what's best for everybody involved. But there's so much that goes into it now that a quick turn around here on we're going to go back to phase two when some people are going back to school in two and a half weeks. That's now you've got to change all your plans as parents too,
right?
And
it affects your schedules
going on.
If you're putting this together, your work,
like I say,
schedule,
I'm lucky that I don't have to deal with
everything
that. And I haven't had to deal with that. Like, I don't know how, like, my sister, for example, has three kids, is running around at home, and her husband's there when this whole thing started. And I called her one night. I was like, I don't know how you do it. Like, I can't. And obviously, you and your wife are in the same boat.
Yeah.
You got three kids running around the house. And yeah, I just don't know how you do it. I'm like, I'm content, because I don't have to go anywhere. I don't have right. to look after anybody but myself, to be completely honest. But it is. It's a change for everybody, and it affects a lot of different people.
It affects every single person in this country.
Yes.
If not the world. You know, every little thing, from wanting to keep your mom and dad safe. You and my parents are both in their 70s. They've had some health issues recently.
Yeah.
You don't want to put them at risk, but yet you want to visit them. You know, you want to go on a vacation or get away, and we haven't done that this summer. I've got all kinds of vacation time stored up. Ha ha, Hyland. I have all Don Hyland, who's probably on vacation right now. That's like, did you know that his full-time job? He takes vacations. But I mean, I would love to take a vacation. I would love to take my kids and go somewhere really cool and do this and do that. And a lot of stuff is closed that they normally like to do. I've got three boys, 14, 11, and 6, and they all have different interests. So if I want to go fishing, one of them wants to go fishing with me. The other two don't.
Yeah.
One wants to go go-kart racing. The other two don't. One wants to go golfing. The other two don't. None of them. My wife and I want to hike. None of them like to hike. You know, a bicycle ride. A couple of them like to ride a bike. Another one doesn't. And so, well, you know what they all like? Water parks. Are water parks really open? Not really. Not
no.
These big water parks that you go, if you go to Colorado or the Dells in Wisconsin, wherever it might be, or the Ozarks. I mean, some of these might be, but, and then if they are open, do you want to risk it? And then I see a whole bunch of people on Facebook talking about all their trips that they're taking, which is fine, good for them, if they decide it's worth the risk to take and travel. And if they can stay isolated, I think is the key. You know, if you're going out hiking in Colorado, it's probably not a bad thing. You're probably okay. But my problem is I don't have people that are all going to be willing to hike. So
yeah.
I go out and I drive 5 hours to Denver, Colorado Springs, wherever, 6 hours, get out there. And then we have a couple things that we do. And then we got it all done in a day. And now what am I going to do the next 3 days on my vacation out there? Because this other stuff's not open. Well, what would you normally do? Well, we'd go bowling, or we might do this, or we might do that. Well, now, do you want to do that and then bring something back to Mitchell County?
We go to a Rockies game.
Yeah, that's right. You're right. I normally go to a sports event, which that ain't going to happen, of course, because yep. I don't allow fans, even if I wanted to. So that affects what we do. And I've heard some people say people need to quit traveling. You know, you bring it back. Well, I'll say this. If you look up stuff, which I haven't done this, but it's very possible that a county that you go to in Colorado, I use Colorado as an example. If you want to go out Colorado on a hike and you go to a county, they may have less active cases than the county you live in or the town you live in here in Kansas.
Yeah.
So you might be safer in Colorado than you are here.
Yeah.
I mean, it just depends on where you live. Oh, I mean, if you live in Sedgwick County, you're probably safer to go to Oklahoma to something, or you're safer to go to Colorado or the Dakotas or Wyoming.
You're safe to go. Wyoming, Montana.
Wyoming, yeah.
They're so big and so spread out.
I've thought about
that. As far as where all the residences are. Right. They're huge. Montana is a huge state, and there's not a lot of population per capita there.
I've never been to Montana. I've thought about that. The thing is, you drive all that way. I like to watch, you know, scenery and drive. My kids don't. My kids do. So they're just sitting, you know, on their video machine, not machines, but screens, whatever. And you're just like, okay, you could have done this at home.
Yeah.
What are we really gaining? Oh, it's a family adventure, but not if you're not participating. And so some people like, oh, how dare they go out of town and travel? Well, if they're being responsible, you know, then it's okay. But the problem is a lot of people aren't. And that gives people that are responsible a bad name. And so I sit here, and I think it's a moral dilemma somewhat. It sounds, maybe it's too, this is too deep, but I think it's a bit of a moral dilemma for me from the standpoint that I want to take my oldest is a freshman in high school. There's only a few more summers left, and he'll be gone.
Yeah.
So I want my family, I would love to take him on a week vacation, go somewhere, and instead, we've done just quick little day trips. Like we might go see something here in Kansas, you know, and that's something that we'll probably end up doing. You know, we've gone to the lake, we've gone here, whatever, but not with other people. We just, you know, did our little thing and stayed as a family and tried to be as responsible as possible. So that's just an example of how that affects my life. Am I mad at COVID because it's ruining my summer from that standpoint, not taking a family vacation? No, I'm not mad about it because it is what it is. There are people who have much worse dilemmas than I do, like people that now don't get an unemployment check or not getting benefits, or don't have a job anymore, or a business owner that's, you know, neck high in debt, that, you know, waiting very nervously as to what the elected officials are going to do that impacts their business or their livelihood. So trust me, my issues are nothing compared to what most people have out there. But the point that the reason I bring that up and the reason Dusty brought his up is because it shows it affects everybody. For instance, it affects us. We do a lot of sports stuff on the radio. Do some streaming. It affects us if school is delayed. It affects us if phase two is put into play by the governor as to whether we're going to have sports or it pushes it back. Mm-hmm. It's a trickle-down effect. Phase two, if the governor implements phase two again, impacts probably every, I don't know, I say probably just to be safe, probably every single Kansan in one form
in
or another.
In some way or
another. It might be an extended way. It might not be super direct way. But for most people, it will be, or could be, I guess. If you opt out, maybe not. So that's what may lie ahead. And we're going to see tomorrow, maybe, if the governor is going to say anything more about phase two. Maybe she won't say a word about it. Maybe she says, we're still thinking about it, which keeps people still in limbo. Or maybe she's going to say, we're going to implement it. And then you get to the point, where do you opt out, and so forth and so on, and how does it affect the schools? And I just think what it does is it puts the kibosh on schools. Unless she says, hey, phase two is going to be lifted August 20th. Oh, that's great. That's when all the schools start. Now what do we do? Now, can you imagine if that happened tomorrow? We're going to go phase two, and on August 20th, we're going to reevaluate it.
Yeah.
So then you're like, okay, but we start August 20th, August 21st. So we say, okay, school as planned August 20th. But on August 20th, we might not because phase two could be extended. I mean, you talk about a real tough situation.
Yeah.
So anyway, we'll see how it plays out. Yesterday, we were talking about football players wanting to get paid. Pac-12 football players.
Yes.
And you know, you and I are like, it's a pipe dream. They probably thinking they're not going to play anyway with COVID-19, so that's their chance to make a statement. A couple things were reasonable, what they're asking for. You know, safety, health with COVID. Yeah, that makes sense. 50% of the revenue, though, that ain't happening. And there's an article by Mark Ziegler of the San Diego Union-Tribune. We know Jay Billis is all for players getting their rightful amount, this and that, which he's never provided a plan that tells us how it's all going to work. There's so many things we could talk about. You know, yesterday Cody and I were texting back and forth, and one of the things that Cody brought, or we actually brought up off the air, and then Cody texted us, so it was like he had a bug and he was watching us or listening to us here. But here's the thing. The schools, if you start paying football players, and those are the ones that are going to be paid first, because that's the biggest moneymaker of all by far when it comes to college sports, at the Power 5 level in particular. You start paying players, well, how much are you going to pay the star quarterback that's number one recruit in America? And then if he has a great year, is that kid going to transfer and go to the highest bidder? Like, let's say K-State gets an unbelievable recruit and he's a great quarterback. In his freshman year, he gets, you know, K-State pays him $200,000. And the kid goes out and has a banner freshman year. K-State wins 10 games. They, you know, they're great. They're competing for the Big 12 title. And then the kid says, I want $1 million. And K-State's like, well, we can't do that. And then Nick Saban goes, I've got a check right here with your name on it. Now, if there's a rule that says you can't transfer, that would put the kibosh on that. But, you know, there's a possibility that could happen. The other thing is, how do you pay all these other players on these other sports that lose money for your university? Does that make sense?
Yes.
And then do you create jealousy? Let's say there's a kid that comes out of high school and he gets paid so much money and all these guys that have been playing on the college football team for 3 years don't get a penny or just get the minimum. Are they going to be jealous? They're going to be a problem there? And then here's the other thing. You've got all, usually schools have what, 80 scholarship players for football?
I think that's 80. What it is, yeah.
Do you think there's still going to be 80 scholarship players if you start paying football players? First of all, are you going to have scholarships? If you're already paying them, are you going to have scholarships? But if you do, aren't you going to cut how many scholarships you have? Don't you think they're going to cut down to 45, 50 players, just like the NFL is a 53-man roster? I mean, college isn't going to sit and go, you know what, we'll give you half of the revenue, and we'll go ahead and keep doing what we're doing with scholarships. That ain't happening. You're going to cut scholarships in different sports to help pay for athletes, or you're going to cut scholarships in a particular sport like football. You don't need 80 people. What's that going to accomplish? You're going to lessen opportunities for people in general.
Yeah.
So Mark Ziegler put this out here. It's very interesting. He says, eventually, and that moment draws near by the day, college athletic administrators need to make a choice. Are they going to continue backpedaling, or are they going to make a tackle? Are they going to stand up and stand by their product, or when is enough going to be enough? Because apparently college athletes, or at least college football players, aren't going to stop asking for more, even as they receive concession after concession. The latest group with its handout is Pac-12 football players who issued a lengthy list of demands Sunday with a threat of boycotting the season. Mark Ziegler, the writer of this article, says, and I quote, here's a suggestion. Go ahead. Boycott anyway. Boycott away all you want. Your loss. The man behind the curtain is former UCLA linebacker Ramogi Huma. He's a proponent of unionizing college athletes who heads a nonprofit advocacy group called the National College Player Association. Look, I personally have no problem with, you know, having players, having a union of some sort, having protection, having a voice. I get that part. I truly do.
Mm-hmm.
12 football players from 9 Pac-12 schools, so that's not a lot of players, identify themselves as part of the movement that adopted the hashtag #WeAreUnited. It's unclear how many of their teammates have joined them, and so forth and so on. Many of the 17 demands by the players involve COVID-19 and racial equality, the summer's two hottest topics, and no doubt a way to exert leverage with a sympathetic public ear. Some are reasonable requests and either already exist or could be implemented easily. But the crux of what this is about is no different than what it's always about when it comes to society. Money. The first item under the fair market pay rights and freedom section of these demands, distribute 50% of each sport's total conference revenue evenly among athletes in their respective sports. Okay, here's presumptive math. If each Pac-12 football program gets, let's say, $32 million per year from TV and bowl payouts, the 100-odd players on the roster should split $16 million of it? On the surface, it sounds great. It always does. College football generates billions of dollars. Coaches make too much. Facilities are over the top. And the poor, exploited players get nothing. The reality, they don't get nothing. They get a full scholarship, which we talked about this yesterday. They get a full scholarship for 5, sometimes 6 years, plus grad school if you finish your undergraduate degree early and still have eligibility. In some cases, that's worth $350,000. You get housing and cost of attendance stipends, recent additions because the scholarship alone wasn't enough. That can be another $10,000 per year in cash. You get priority registration, so you don't have to wait a semester or 6 semesters for that popular upper division class with the primo professor. You finish with no student loans. That's something I mentioned yesterday.
Yeah.
All these people, the players that whining about this and are on full ride scholarship, they ain't going to have student debt. All these other people don't have scholarships. They have a ton of student debt. So you finish with no student loans. Or $37,468 less than the average California grad did last year. You get academic tutoring 24/7. You have food available 24/7. You fly charter. You stay in five-star hotels. You get per diems. You get boxes and boxes of athletic apparel and gear. You have access to some of the best doctors and dentists and ophthalmologists in the county and the country. You work out in a private weight room with state-of-the-art equipment. You're conferred an elite social status on campus. Starting soon, you can enter into your own personal endorsement contracts for your name, image, and license made more marketable by the 100-year history and branding of your university. So what's the total value that you get? $100,000 per year? $200,000 per year? More? And that's not enough? Mark Ziegler goes on to say, at some point, college administrators need to say it as it is. They need to say, here's what we can offer. We think it's more than generous. If you don't like it, you're under no obligation to accept it. College sports aren't for everyone. Dyshawn Nix, a five-star point guard from Las Vegas, didn't earlier this year. He had committed to UCLA, but guess what? He signed a pro contract with the NBA's G League instead. No hard feelings. Best of luck to you, man. You made the decision that was right for you. The problem is that people making the demands never operate an athletic department. They've never tried to balance a budget, never filed an NCAA or Title IX compliance report, never understood the delicate, flawed, intricate biosphere in what college sports gasp for breath. The great myth is that colleges are running $100 bills through counting machines, then stashing them in offshore accounts in the Caymans. About two dozen athletic departments actually turn something approaching a profit. The rest are partially, or in some cases, heavily subsidized by tax dollars, student fees, and alumni donations, as we're learning now, dangerously exposed to the slightest economic downturn. In many ways, Huma and his players are barking up the wrong tree. You want to keep and distribute the riches that Power Conference football generates? Send your demands to the U.S. Department of Education, which administrates Title IX and its guarantees of gender equity at any university receiving federal grants, which is pretty much all of them. If you play Division I football and it's 85 scholarships, you must sprinkle 85 scholarships on the female side of the ledger as well because of Title IX, usually across several sports, which explains why many athletic departments offer more women's sports than men's sports. One solution is to cut football scholarships from 85 to 45, or enough for a first and second string plus a kicker. That seems reasonable. That would allow athletic departments to eliminate 40 scholarships from the women's side as well. So keep that in mind. If you're going to cut the football roster from 85 to 45, now you can cut 40 scholarships from women. Do people understand that?
Yes.
That's called Title IX. That would drastically reduce overall expenses, wouldn't it? You have a traveling party of 45 for football instead of 85? So presumably that would leave more football dollars to be distributed among football players. But now you just cut 5,000 scholarships nationally that would have been used for football players who, let's face it, might not otherwise go to college or be admitted. You just eliminate opportunities for the very people you purport to represent. Another demand, and this is the best part of this in my opinion, another demand from Huma's group is to end lavish facility expenditures. That's a great idea. Would Huma's players, college players, be okay asking an English lit major for a spot on the bench press at the Student Rec Center? Sharing a practice field with Theta Chi's IM flag football team? Having 350-pound linemen cram in the middle seats on a Southwest flight to road games in coach, then stay forward to a room at Motel 6, waiting in line at the Student Health Center to get their injured knee examined, then hoping to be scheduled for an MRI sometime next month? Athletic directors don't want to build those lavish facilities either, but they'll keep doing it as long as recruits keep making college choices based on cherry wood locker rooms instead of chemistry departments. Nor do ADs want to pay an offensive coordinator $1 million per year, but they also understand the capitalistic principles of a free market economy and the effect of winning football games on their bottom line. So you don't want some guy with a backwards cap from the local JC spitting chewing tobacco into a cup while mulling, what do I do on third and long in the fourth quarter of the Rose Bowl? You pay a guy that knows what he's doing. The Ivy League peered over the slippery slope back in 1954 and made the concerted decision not to offer athletic scholarships. You can apply and qualify for financial aid like every other student. Athletes who go there know the deal and have accepted its terms. You don't like it? Don't go there. College sports isn't for everyone. Some strong points from Mark Ziegler of the San Diego Tribune. I have to admit, I agree with a lot of things he said there. And I'm not against players getting their own. But he makes some really good points. And that's one thing when I read these demands about cutting the lavish expenditures, I'm like, dude, you're cutting the stuff that you get to enjoy.
Yeah.
I mean, you see these weight rooms? Trust me, I've been on a charter plane, private charter plane for athletic events. I've covered K-State women and men's basketball, whatever, mostly women in the traveling part. But I've seen the hotels they stay in. You know why? Because I stayed in there with them. Yeah. I stayed at the hotel. I was put up there filling in for play-by-play for K-State. That's just K-State. I ain't telling you where Alabama stays. Yeah. That was K-State women's basketball. Yeah. I don't know where the K-State men's football team stays. Yeah. All right? You're sitting in really nice buses when you're getting bused from the airport to the hotel. You got the plane, usually, if you have the charters, they're nice, comfortable. You've got plenty of food. Trust me, tons of food at the hotel that they spend a lot of money on, the schools do. So you're right. The schools could save a lot of money, and maybe they could save money on those lavish expenditures to give you more to pay you. Well, then guess what you're going to have to do as a football player? Now you're going to have to buy your ticket to get on that plane.
Yeah.
Or if you want to go from coach to first class, or you want a charter plane, you might have to buy that charter flight. Good luck with that. So these are the things that athletes don't fully think about, okay? Now, I get where players are coming from. Millions of dollars are made off of of these athletes. Yeah. It's not all the athletes. It's some. I mean, can you get by with 50 football players instead of 80? Yes. Yes. Yes, you can, okay? So don't sit here and tell me you're the 78th guy on the team and that they make millions and billions of dollars off of you. If you don't play, they ain't making money off you,
no.
Okay? You're not, if you're not a regular player, you're not. They're not making money off of you. They're making money off the sport and the players that excel. That's where they make their money, even merchandise sales. So I understand where their players are coming from, but for people to sit here and I've always said this, and I don't understand it. Well, they don't get paid. Yes, they do. It's just not the way you normally would get paid. I would challenge an athlete that whines about everything they get, and they're at a really nice university getting all those things we just talked about. I would say, you know what? If you really think it's that bad, then we'll just take it. We'll let you stay on the team, but we'll take away your scholarship. You can still, you don't, that's fine. You pay tuition. You go ahead and pay for your books, your room and board, whatever else. You figure this out. You get your own tutoring. You go ahead and you figure out what hotel you're going to stay in nearby. Oh, we stay in the 5-star. Because you're not going to stay at 5-star, it's going to be more expensive, uh-huh. Right? You're going to go with the cheaper one, like Motel 6, as he says here. You're going to maybe go to McDonald's instead of you having a steak dinner at the big-time hotel. You're going to sleep in a small bed that's crickety and makes noise. You like that's the one thing I didn't understand is demands. The lavish expenditures, that's to benefit you.
Yeah.
Of all the lavish expenditures, if there is a sport that it caters to more than any other sport in America, it's football.
Oh, yeah.
And it's the football players that are putting these demands out there. That demand to me was ridiculous because you're basically biting the hand that feeds you on that one. Yeah. Literally.
Yeah.
So I get where Mark Ziegler's coming from. I get both sides of it. If you're an athlete, you say, listen, I can't hold a regular job. Well, you don't have time. You hardly have any time to do it anyway, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Because it's a 24/7 thing anymore. You got classes, barely have time to get your classwork in. You're traveling. And I know that's not easy, but guess what? You go in the pros, you got to travel too. You got to travel. You got full scholarship. So in essence, you're being paid to play because you have a scholarship. And you get your education for free. You get the nice gear you can go out and sell when you graduate and make a little bit of money off of that.
Yeah.
You get these nice gifts when you go to Rose Bowl games. Do you get as much as you should get? Maybe not. I'm not a college athlete, so maybe I shouldn't be talking from that standpoint. Maybe they don't get enough based on all the money that comes in. That could very well be true. But they still get a lot right now. And you factor in everything that Mark Ziegler just put in there, which I was aware of all that for the most part too. And then you put in the fact that if you're going to, you want all this money spent on football players or paying all athletes, because trust me, you pay football, then you better start paying the rowing team and everybody else. Or you're going to take away their scholarships and say, we'll pay you. But guess what? My scholarship's worth $100,000, Dusty. We'll pay you 50 grand. Sure. We'll take off your scholarship. We'll pay you 50 grand. That could possibly be a possibility, right?
Yeah.
But you know what? You're right. We should pay you. Here's $50,000. Okay, that sounds great. Oh, yeah. If you don't do the homework, cost me $78,000 to go to school here this year.
Yeah.
So I don't know where it leads. I don't know where it goes. I have no idea how you enforce anything. I don't know how you can just let people pay players to play at the college level, because then you're not amateur anymore, you're pro. And yes, players are getting paid under the table, and yes, there's cheating happening all the time. And yes, football is treated like a whole different animal, and they stay in the best hotels, and they get the best planes, they get more charters, and they get taken care of better than any other sport, which that is what makes it ironic to me. That the sport that's complaining, the players that are making these demands are football players,
And that's the one sport, if there's any, it's other sports that should complain. But the comeback for those sports are, hey, you're lucky we have a scholarship. You're lucky we have a sport. You're lucky you have rugby and soccer because you lose us money. You can thank the football team. That's the one that's funding you. And that's where the players come back and say, see, we are the key to funding everything. And maybe that's the leverage. Listen, if you don't do this and we boycott, we don't play, and there's no football, then guess what? Everybody else is going to feel the pinch of that, won't they? The women's volleyball team, the men's baseball team, wrestling, whatever it might be. So they're trying to use a little leverage maybe from that standpoint. It's a pipe dream. You're not getting 50% revenue. Not going to happen. And universities, I think, is very well going to say, listen, if you want to play college ball, you play. And if you don't, this is the way we're going to do it. And we think it's pretty generous. And if you don't like it, don't play. Don't go out. Go to another school, I guess, that maybe is going to do bend over backwards for you. But this is what is the landscape. This is what we're going to do. We'll find somebody that'll play instead of you. Maybe not as good as you. That's possible. But this is what we offer. We think it's a pretty solid offer. Free education. Free meals. Free travel. Free swag. Free gear. We think it's a pretty decent deal. If you don't like this deal, it's not good enough for you, then feel free to go somewhere else. Here's the thing. Unless you're a superstar, a super superstar that can go straight to the G League, as the example I used, you really need college. Even if you don't want to go to school, you need college to what? Help you get drafted.
Yeah.
You need college. So you're going to choose as an athlete, you're going to put your foot down and say, hey, we're not getting enough. We should be paid. You're not going to go out for football? Okay. You do that. Do you think you're going to have a scholarship for the full 4 years you're at that school? If you ain't playing, you ain't going to have that scholarship for the whole time.
No.
Like somebody said yesterday, if you ain't going to play, that's the reason you're on scholarship. That's the trade-out. You get a free education to play ball. If you don't want to play ball, why do you get a free education? Fair point.
Very fair point.
It's called a trade.
Yeah. You're compensated for a job, basically. It's not the same way, like you said. It's not cash in your pocket like we're talking about.
And that's what some don't get.
You are compensated for what you'll call, quote unquote, a job. Mm-hmm. I know I looked this up in the past, but I was like, what's Notre Dame 4 year?
What's
sticker price for 4 years at Notre Dame is $287,000. You're getting paid $287,000 to play football at Notre Dame if you go
before
4 years.
Any of the other stuff you get.
Yeah, before stipends, before now you can make money off your likeness. Mm-hmm. So add that.
That'll
to
be additional
income.
To.
Yeah, yeah. And
of course, that'll only be a select few. You gotta do that.
But. Yeah, those are things you don't have to worry about.
Right.
$287,000 over 4 years
to attend Notre Dame.
It's $71,000 right now is what it would cost.
Right.
And that's, I think, factoring the website I'm looking at right now, is factoring in increase in tuition and things like that that would usually happen on a maybe yearly or semi-annual basis. But
$287,000.
$287,000. That's for one person.
Right.
That's one. Now, obviously, you know, the students that are going there are probably getting some pretty good grants and scholarships. If you're smart enough to go to Notre Dame, you're getting money to help toward your tuition.
Right.
But Ricky Waters, you know, like guys like that are playing football, they're getting paid.
And here's the thing: play. You pay athletes. You're gonna pay, like, let's say you reduce the scholarships from 85 to 45. Let's go. You go 85 to 45. Okay. So you save 40 scholarships. Is every one of the 45, are they going to get paid the exact same amount like you have now? You get a full ride. That's, you all get paid the same. It's a full ride scholarship. That's what it is. Or is it going to be that five of the 45 players are going to get all this extra money, and so all we're doing is catering to five or six players on every team to get paid, and everybody else gets the basically equivalent of a scholarship anyway? And then as a result of those few players that get more money because they think they're, you know, deserve it, which maybe they do, then you create animosity among your teammates and jealousy on top of everything else. But also, you then affect women's sports. You take 40 scholarships away, women lose 40 opportunities. And not just women, it can be other opportunities for other sports, men's sports or women's sports. So you're talking about a whole bunch of people could be affected to pay who? To pay a few players that are really good? Is that what this is about? Are you going to pay everybody the exact same amount? Are you going to pay the rowing team, the rugby team, anybody that's on scholarship for those sports, or wrestling or basketball or volleyball or baseball, the exact same amount you're going to pay football? Because that's what you're doing now. The Fulbright scholarship is the same price for everybody. And to me, that's fair. You're a really good athlete. You'd be on the rugby team. You worked your butt off. You have a right to a free education based off of you provide all the work to put in to be on the rugby team. Does the school need rugby? No. Does the school need football? Yes. And there's probably the biggest.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the biggest talking point. And that's what the players are basically seeing. But how in the world? So you're saying you want a scholarship plus $5,000 a semester? I mean, what are you looking for? That's what I don't get. Like 50% of the revenue, which would be, what do you say, 16? What was, how much money was that? 16 million?
I can't remember what you said.
16 million, I think it was. 16 million was the example he used here. So 100 odd football players on the roster, split $16 million. So the guy that's the walk-on and never plays gets the same amount? Is that going to be a problem, too?
Yeah.
I mean, how are you going to disperse that money? And I'm just talking football. I ain't talking about other stuff. So does that mean scholarships are the same for every other sport and this just applies to football? Because if I'm sitting here going, dude, I'm a pretty dang good basketball player here for the University of Kansas, and all my jerseys are in the store that I walk in every day and see at Allen Fieldhouse, why in the world am I, football's getting their money, why I'm not getting my money? You see where this kind of trickles all the way down?
Yeah.
I'm Sabrina Inescu from Oregon, but she might already got her money. She's a Nike school, you know, Phil Knight. But she could say, where was my money? I was a star player. I brought attention to Oregon. I did more. I brought more attention to the University of Oregon women or men's basketball team with my talent.
Yeah.
Where was my money? Or if she was still there, where's my money? I mean, where does it end? It doesn't.
It doesn't.
That's the problem.
There's no spot to, there's really no spot to start or end on it.
Thus, you don't let the genie out of the bottle.
Yeah.
Clover, he's usually our color guy for football, but we got a problem. Clover just texted me. My demands for color radio job, I want lifetime medical, even if I quit, retirement package, use of vehicle, stipend for meals, every other Friday off, or I'll opt out.
Well, it was a fun run, Todd.
Well, Todd, we really enjoyed having you on the broadcast, my friend. Best of luck to you. And that's what I think, that's what Mark Ziegler's saying in this article. Administrators, have the kahunas to say, listen, you're now going to get paid for likeness and image and this. That's better than what you had. We're still offering everything else we did before. Listen, if you have a big problem with it, fine. Go somewhere else. We enjoyed talking to you.
Yeah.
There's plenty of people out there in America that will jump at the opportunity to get a free ride scholarship to play sports.
Yes.
If somebody doesn't want it. There are plenty of people lined up ready to go. So I don't know if some players want to call that bluff. And it's going to hurt you more in the long run than it's going to hurt any football program. Because you're not going to get your money. If you're a scholarship, you at least get free education, I guess. So maybe that works. But I don't know why schools are going to keep giving out free educations if people ain't playing. I don't get how that's going to work. And you're not going to be seen if you're trying to make it to the pros. You're not going to get that exposure, which is part of the reason why you probably went to a big-name school anyway.
Yes.
So I don't see how it behooves anybody to, I'm not playing because we're not getting paid. Well, you're not going to get paid. That ain't going to change. So you're basically saying you're not going to play. Then why did you go to school? Well, for the education? Well, I hope so. If you still are allowed to have your scholarship for this year, great. But next year, you won't have a scholarship if you're not going to play.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. It just, everybody wants theirs, right?
Absolutely.
Everybody wants theirs. And
they don't care how they get it either.
And rightfully so. That's the capitalistic society and the society we live in. We all want ours, including Clover, apparently. Well, Todd, you've done a great job for us. We appreciate your time. Yeah. Let's see. Cody says, with those Notre Dame figures you threw out there, the school is paying $23 million for an 80-man football team. Sounds about right.
Yeah.
Sounds about right.
That's why they're saying this doesn't grow on trees.
And why does a school pay $23 million for an 80-man football team? Because it makes them a lot of money.
Yes.
And thus the players come back and say, see, we want a piece of that.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.